Welcome to A Higher Branch, a source of practical and powerful information for busy people dedicated to boosting their personal health and professional performance. I'm your host, Sam McCall. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of A Higher Branch. Now, today I'm super excited to be sitting down with my good friend, world-renowned psychologist and a Higher Branch faculty member, Dr. Guy Winch. For those of you who are new to our community, Guy has a PhD in clinical psychology and is a member of the American Psychological Association. He currently lives in New York City, where he operates a full-time private practice. But he's also a much-loved TED Talk speaker with his first seminar, Why We All Need to Practice Emotional First Aid, going viral with over 12 million views. But since we last met to record a previous podcast, he has gone on to launch his very own podcast series called Dear Therapists, co-hosted by Laurie Gottlieb. Now, my wife, Katrina, is absolutely addicted to that podcast, and I'm sure you will too. Now, Dr. Guy Winch is a truly remarkable human being with so much knowledge to share, and anyone who attended both Upgrade Your Life events in the previous 2 years will agree with me. And today, we're going to be unloading more valuable insights as we tackle the topic of heartbreak. Now, Dr. Guy Winch has published a book called How to Fix a Broken Heart. And when he released it back in 2018, it instantly became a bestseller. But even more so now, because the topic of heartbreak has skyrocketed because, unfortunately, the restrictions has put a strain on a lot of partnerships and there's been a lot of breakups and a lot of heartbreak. So unfortunately, heartbreak is a part of our life and we all experience it in one way or another. And when we are confronted with heartbreak, it can feel as if there is no end to the pain. There's no end to the loneliness. And at times we can feel despair. So today, Dr. Guy Winch and myself will discuss how heartbreak affects us in every aspect of our life, how it impacts those 8 areas of life. But most importantly, how we can use the pain to grow and become stronger. Yes, stronger. We will also discuss how heartbreak impacts our brain and our overall behavior so we can see the signs, and not just in ourselves if we're going through heartbreak, but more importantly with others who may be going through heartbreak and either suffering in silence. And it's good to know what those behaviors are. We're also going to discuss tips on how to manage the loneliness and grief that we inevitably will feel. And lastly, we're going to go through some simple advice on how to fix a broken heart. So on that note, welcome back to A Higher Branch, Dr. Guy Winch.
Hi, Sam. How lovely to be with you again.
Awesome to see your face. We were having a chat offline before this podcast and just brought so much warmth and joy to my heart, honestly, to see your face and to talk with you again and listen to your voice.
Yes, I've missed you. This pandemic has made it hard to see the people you were hoping to see.
On that note, today's topic is one that we haven't really covered in the past because we've done many podcasts, you and I, and we've never really spoken about how to fix a broken heart. So when my producer, Bianca, mentioned it, I said, I'm pretty sure I've spoken to Guy about this. She said, no, you haven't. And it's because I've listened to your TED Talk and you've spoken about it at Upgrade Your Life as well. And out of those two talks that I've heard you and seen you, I've had a lot of time to think about it and questions that I have and people that I've spoken to about this area, because the tree of love in our framework, the Higher Branch framework, is such an important area of life. For those of you that are new to our growing podcast, so we have the framework for life that I call the operating system for living is made up of two frameworks. The first framework is the what. The second framework is the how. Now, the first framework, the what we call it, is the 8 areas of life. And each one of these 8 areas fill a fundamental human need. And they impact us in varying ways, and which is why I like to prioritize them in this sequence. The first is the tree of health. Second is the tree of love, meaning physical and emotional intimacy with someone. Third is the tree of family. Fourth is a tree of work for fulfillment. Then there's a tree of friendship for belonging, tree of learning for growth, tree of wealth for freedom, and tree of charity for contribution. Now, we can experience loss in the tree of health when we lose our health. It's the physical pain for someone going through chronic pain. It really impacts us and destroys our quality of life. But the tree of love, when we experience loss in that, it's quite different to the tree of family or the tree of friendship or the tree of work. So we can lose a job and we experience loss, and we can lose a friend and get that feeling of rejection. They're all a form of rejection. But why is it that love, that rejection, hurts the most? And I've heard you say, Guy, that it's actually under the MRI, or when science look at it, it has the same impact on us as physical pain. In fact, physical pain at the threshold of 8 out of 10 has the same impact on our brain in imagery than the emotional loss of our lover, our partner, our spouse.
It is quite remarkable, functional MRIs, because they do show you what's happening in the brain in real time. You lie in the MRI machine and then you're asked to think about the person who broke your heart. These participants for this were people who were freshly heartbroken. So they were really in a lot of emotional pain, and it really did mimic physical pain very strongly. But the other thing it did is it showed that the withdrawal of romantic love activates similar pathways that get activated when opioid addicts withdrawing from heroin. In other words, it's not just about the pain, it's about the intense craving. If you think about a heroin addict who's jonesing, wanting a fix, then they do all kinds of things they would never do otherwise, right? Heroin addicts are quote unquote desperate. They would sell themselves for a fix or sell their mother for a fix kind of thing, that kind of desperate behavior you don't see elsewhere. Well, you see it in heartbreak, because if you want to compare heartbreak to regular grief, say your dear one died rather than broke up with you, you will experience a lot of overlap in those pains. But if they died, you would experience primarily grief. It would be more paralyzing. It would be more depressing. You would be withdrawn. You wouldn't want to engage. You wouldn't want to get out of bed. With heartbreak, you have a lot of all of that, but you also have the crazy behavior that comes with it, the desperate acts that you would tend to see with addicts when they're withdrawing, the 150 texts in an hour, the begging, the bargaining, the stalking outside their window, the flying across the world to surprise them, even though they just broke up with you. They're all these really crazy behaviors that people engage in an effort to try and get their love back. You don't see that, obviously, in grief because they can't, but you also don't see that because it's a very different kind of loss in that sense. So heartbreak is not only excruciatingly painful, but it really sets you up to be in this withdrawal cycle that makes you act really out of character.
Yes, and that's why I really wanted to cover this topic, even though 2 years old, really, for yourself, and you wrote the books 2 years ago. But I thought, look, it's time to also dig that that topic out again and just look at it, because since COVID and the restrictions in Australia, we've had a huge spike in breakups. Now, I don't know what it's like in other countries. And I've personally been exposed to a lot of friends who have broken up. And that desperation you talked about, you can just see it. And there's a lot of acting out of character, revenge sex with strangers, really impulsive behavior. And these are people that were once pretty solid, right? Mm-hmm. It is vastly different, isn't it, to losing a job or losing a family member? So I hope you don't mind us covering this topic.
No, this topic, I really, Sam, this is an evergreen topic. We started our podcast 6 months ago, our most popular episode by far, 50% more popular than the second most popular episode, is the episode about heartbreak, because it is so universal and it is so dramatic and it's so really hard to understand. Like, what is going on? People really think they're going crazy. What is going on with me that I would behave this way? Why am I doing these things? Why am I so out of sorts? I mean, it's very discombobulating. There's nothing else in our psychological experience or repertoire that makes us truly act crazy. And I use that word euphemistically, but makes us truly act crazy as heartbreak. There just is nothing else in our experience that does that. And it does it so profoundly, as you said. People act so out of character. They act out, period, and in all kinds of ways. And it can be revenge, it can be anger. It's just a fascinating topic because most people have been through it to some extent. They certainly know people who have if they have not, and they certainly might if they have not.
And it seems to be also the feelings are up and down like a yo-yo. So
yes,
they remember them in times of anger and pain, but even when they're having a good time somewhere, they're like, oh, I wish they were here for me to share this moment with them. They would have liked this. And then they on the phone to call them or take a photo and send a text message to them. this is where I am and this is where you should be as well. And so it's like this yo-yo of emotions. It's
a yo-yo of emotions because you go from being reasonable to lacking reason. You go from being of sound mind to completely being out of your mind. And you can cycle that way through the day. That's what massive pain does. And truly the chemical withdrawal that's going on in our brains. This thing about the opioid pathways is so interesting to me because I grew up when I was in undergraduate learning psychology and looking at drug addiction and heroin. It's like just everyone's association to heroin addiction was, oh, those people do desperate things because of this drug, how terrible the drug is. That's a drug. This is not a drug. This is available on the street. This is available. You can fall in love and get heartbroken. Anyone can, truly at any age. And it has the same impact. To me, that's a fascinating thing that this illegal, dangerous drug that ruins lives exists in natural form in human connection and really disconnection. To me, is a fascinating idea, but also explains the behavior so perfectly.
Is it more intense for people whose identity is so narrowly focused on just a tree of love and not spread across the other areas of life?
Yes, it's probably way more intense for them. But other than the intensity in the moment or the aftermath of the breakup, they're going to have a much harder time recovering. Because if all their eggs are in that basket, then that's where all their sense of identity and self-esteem, connection, attachment, purpose is sitting. And if you don't have that to spread around, if you don't have that other passion, that career, those relationships, the things that you do that occupy you, if you're not spread around in other endeavors, if all your emotional and intellectual resources are in just that one lane, then you're way more vulnerable to losses in that lane. Whereas if you're spread around, you might have the initial blow be as sharp, but you should recover much more quickly and nimbly because it's not all of you. And there are many aspects of your life and your day that are not about heartbreak at some point, even though at the beginning they might be. Whereas if you don't have that to distract you, to draw your attention, to give you feelings and nourish you in other ways, if you don't have those other avenues, it's going to be very difficult.
Yes, which is a reminder for people in our community, the importance of defining your identity in those eight areas of life.
Right.
Because if you have the CEO, the founder of the company whose identity is all wrapped up in the tree of work and their business, and then they sell their business or then they're fired as a CEO and they experience an identity crisis. So I think.
Or even if they retire, Sam, sometimes, right? Like they might do an exit or sell their business and go, I'm going to retire. I've worked with so many people who retired early because they could, got incredibly miserable and realized, yeah, that wasn't well planned. And it just wasn't that it wasn't well planned. It wasn't planned, period. People don't understand that when you have these eight trees, that if you're very embedded in one of them, you can't just give that up without substitutions. It will create this huge vacuum that's going to have a big impact. In other words, you have to be mindful of all these areas of your life. And if you're going to give up some aspects of them, then what are the substitutions? Where are the makeups? How do you fill those voids? What are you going to do with that aspect of your identity and personality that's not going to get addressed? I mean, you need to be thoughtful about these things.
That's right. So even if you are in a relationship that's going well and successful, you should always make sure that you have your own life in the eight areas, that you exercise, you take care of your health, you focus on your job, you focus on your friendships, on your learning, and you need to define your life, not just in that area. And that's a message to a lot of spouses who are stay-at-home parents, right? Whether they are the mums or dads, they find if they wrap up their whole identity with being a parent and a partner and nothing else, they're really setting themselves up for heartbreak. And I know this isn't me saying, hey, neglect your family and don't focus on those areas of life, but sure, date your partner and be a great parent, but you need to also do things that light you up in the other areas of life. So spread the obsession.
Well, you see this, Sam, with empty nesters, with people who have been so focused, let's say, on just parenting and work or just parenting and homemaking, that when the last child leaves the home, they haven't focused enough on the actual marriage or the relationship. They haven't focused enough on any individual enrichment or individual aspects of activities that are meaningful and exciting for them. They haven't focused on jobs. They haven't focused on so many areas. And suddenly they have this massive void and they're like, oh, I'm going through empty nest. I'm very depressed. And the solution to that is never oh, at that point, start doing something. It's like you shouldn't have been so laser focused and ignoring these other aspects of your life all along. Now, it doesn't mean that you can devote as much to all these aspects as you can to certain ones, but you have to have your toe in the waters in all of them, at least.
Absolutely. It's like getting diabetes or heart disease and saying, oh, I should have, could have, would have. You know, it's too late. You need to start the process of defining your identity throughout your life and not neglecting parts of it because you live on this premise that one day I'm going to work less and date more, or one day I'm going to eat better and sleep more. You've got to be working on yourself, whether you're, you know, 17 or 70. Let's look at how to fix a broken heart. So for someone that's sitting at home or in the car listening to their podcast saying, well, it's so easy for you guys to talk about it. You don't know what I'm feeling. It's the end of my life. I've been with this person for 20 years or even 2 years. Is heartbreak more?
Even 2 months, Sam.
Even 2 months. Wow.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen it even after a date or two. In my book, How to Fix a Broken Heart, I tell a story of a woman who pretty much after one date went to pieces. And in that case, I mean, it's all about the context, because that one date for her had meaning that was supersized and expectations that were supersized. And so it depends on the context. Somebody can be with somebody for 40 years and get heartbroken, but they, let's say, if they're secure in these other branches of life, or depending on their context, they will do much better than someone whose everything about them is wrapped up in this one relationship and all their hopes, expectations, and existence. That's going to be much more difficult for them. So in terms of how you heal, there are a variety of aspects for healing. And one of them is to first understand, and why I talk about this opioid pathway in the brain and why I talk about the emotional pain is because if you don't understand what's going on, you think you're going crazy. And that distress has been shown in studies to add to the recovery. In other words, to complicate the recovery, because it's bad enough that you're trying to recover from heartbreak. But if now you have this, and I'm losing my mind, and I'm going crazy, what's wrong with me? I'm going crazy. It's going to make it even more complicated. So to understand, no, you're not going crazy. This is what's happening. Your brain is reacting like you've just withdrawn from heroin. Your brain's reacting like somebody is just literally harming you physically, and that you're walking around with that pain in extended ways for long times, and it's intense pain. The thing about the pain study that they did to look at the equivalency between the physical and the emotional pain was the duration of the physical pain was 7 seconds. And that was the equivalency. Heartbreak doesn't come in 7 second spurts. It comes in 7 hour spurts, 7 day spurts. So you're in intense pain for a long time. Once you understand that, then you can be a little bit more kind to yourself in terms of what's going on, but be a little less worried and freaked out about, oh my goodness, what's happening to me? Why am I responding this way? Your brain is responding this way, whether you want it to or not.
So it's a normal reaction to a rejection. What's the worst thing you can do after a breakup?
I've heard people say, I am going to make it my mission to get that person back till the last day I have. And I'm like, oh Lord, that's not a mission. Take the no, they're just not interested. So as painful as that is as a reality, they're not interested. Usually people who have that mission find that their next mission is how to get out of the restraining order, because there's a little too far you can go there. There are many mistakes. And here's one I think that's most painful for people, a mistake they make that's very painful. They will stalk their ex on social media, which is painful enough, right? Just to see them and miss them. But what they'll see on social media is, oh my goodness, my ex seems happy. They seem to have moved on. It's been a day, it's been a week, it's been a month. I'm still bereft. How have they moved on? Two answers to that question. Number one, it's social media. It's curated. Your ex, to the extent that they're having difficult moments, won't put them on social media because few people do. We curate an image, and that image is like, we have a great life. Secondly, they have been thinking about the breakup for months, if not years or weeks, depending on the length of relationship. No one tells you they're thinking of breaking up when they have the first thought. It's just not something people do. They don't just sit there at breakfast, go like, I'm thinking maybe we shouldn't be together, but I'm not sure past the cornflakes. It's not the way that works, right? They sit on it, they cook it, they make a plan until they're ready. And usually, especially in a long-term relationship, they will time it. Often, out of kindness. Often they know that you have this big thing at work coming up that we don't do it to you before then, or it's the holidays, we had this trip planned. They don't hate you, they're just not enough anymore, so they want to leave, but we'll do it after the holidays. And what it leaves you then with is, I don't understand. They came to my presentation. We had this great vacation. What happened between Saturday when we came back from the vacation and Tuesday when they told me they want to break up? Well, nothing happened. That's just when they had timed it. But if you want to go through conspiracy theories and all kinds of ideas about what you might have said or what eyebrow you might have raised in a way that caused them to break up a 40-year relationship, you'll come up with all kinds of false options, but it's not about that. So they have started the process of disconnecting from you a long time before you did. You're just starting it now. Of course, they're going to be in a different place.
There's a lot of people that I've come across that say, we had sex last week.
Mm-hmm. In their head, it was goodbye sex. In their head, you didn't know that yet, but in their head was like one last time. Because again, sometimes breakups come when you actually hate each other and it's not a surprise, but usually they come with emotional drifting. It just, the person drifted and got drifted away until they were just like, no, I don't want this anymore. It's not enough for me anymore. Or I fell in love with someone else and they didn't tell you. So sometimes it's, I hate you and that's why I want to break up with you. But most of the time it's not. And so, yes, they can be nice and they can go on vacation with you. They can go on holiday with you. They can have sex with you and even be sincere in the moment. But they are not in love anymore and they want to out.
Now, I know this is outside the scope of this topic, but you said they're not in love anymore. What is the difference between loving someone and being in love with them?
The difference is when you're in love with someone, it's that romantic love that has an aspect of possessiveness, of attachment, of need, of infatuation that you don't get when you love a sibling, when you love a parent, when you love a friend. You're not infatuated with your friend. You're not obsessed with them. You don't think about them day and night.
You mentioned infatuation and obsession. They don't sound healthy.
Well, yes, there's a lot about love that's not healthy per se in the sense that it's a form of addiction, especially in the formative stages in which there is infatuation and obsession. It's a form of addiction, right? That's why you get the withdrawal. You don't get the withdrawal without the addiction. When you're falling in love, it's the addiction part. And there is discussion in scientific journals about whether love should be classified as a form of addiction. Can you imagine? There's actually discussion about it because it looks like that in the brain. So some people are like, well, maybe we should call it a form of addiction. And I'm like, maybe you should be a little bit more romantic. Let's not have everyone think love's a bad addiction. But it has so much overlap.
Every relationship goes through a period where after many years, that infatuation or obsession just goes, or that addiction. So you can go away for 2 days alone with your friends and not have that addiction.
Right.
Where you get to a stage where you're just comfortable in a relationship and you have more of the friendship and there's also the intimacy, of course, but there's not the addiction part of it.
Right. Because at some point it gets deeper. And at some point that person is just now a permanent, constant feature in your internal life. They are someone that you count on, assume is going to be there. When you have a child, that person becomes a part of your existence forever. That's, you can go away for 2 days, but you're still attached to them. You think about them, you care about them, you consider them, they're part of your decisions and thoughts and all of that. It's the same with love when it deepens and goes past that infatuation stage. It's a little bit less obsessive, but it's actually more permanently kind of attached. And that's why that ripping that out when it's such a aspect of every other part of your life can feel so traumatic, because it's just connected to so many aspects of who you are internally and externally.
Yeah, especially if the areas of your life are interwoven, and it would be extremely painful.
You are losing a part of yourself, and that's going to be very painful. And it's not that you lose a part of yourself that's gone forever. They're actually a neighborhood away, that part of yourself. They're actually in another city. They exist in the world, but you just can't have them. That's the thing that's so difficult.
So do you go cold turkey if you're in a relationship that's irretrievably broken up and your heart is broken? Do you go cold turkey and just cut off everything to do with them? Do you move house? Do you burn their photos? Do you stop looking at their social media? What does cold turkey look like?
Do you just all of it? Cold? Yes, you do cold turkey, and you do it at least temporarily. People say to me, like, but that's a person I might want to have in my life at some point. I'm like, great, and I'm sure if you're cordial and friends, they might be in your life at some point. Actually, I know many, 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 many people who've broken up and have new relationships, and they're best friends, and they are involved with the other person, and their partners know one another, and yes, they used to be together, but now they're not. But you can't do that right away, or if you can, or if you do, it'll just take longer to recover. You do need that break, because you really need to make it about you. And you can't make it about you when you're still orienting toward the other person and they're actually there and visible for you. So yes, the move of social media, unfollow, do all of those things, at least temporarily. I don't believe you have to burn photos, but you can put them away, number one. Number two, you do want to change your environment. You don't want that many associations evoked of them, and there will be plenty to begin with, because right now everything is going to evoke them in association. So redecorate the room. We have episode that came out last week in the podcast was of a man whose wife cheated on him and they separated, and he redid his apartment and changed it around so it wouldn't remind him of her. And then she wanted to come back. And he was like, oh, wow, I kind of got her out of here already in my head, right? Because he had redecorated and redone all these things to remove her presence, quote unquote. And then she came back and we talked with him about whether she truly is back or not. He thinks she is. We are not so sure. But that idea of, yeah, redo the walls. That picture of you together is not going to help you if you keep looking at it. Put something else there. Really try and remove the associations to give yourself a chance. Just as, again, think of the heroin addict. You can do methadone, but really as much as you can do cold turkey, that's the true recovery.
Now, I want to ask you a question, but before I do, one of the things you talk about is that when we break up with our partner, we tend to look back fondly on all the amazing memories we had of them, but we never remember the arguments, the annoying habits, the things that really irritate you about them. Why do we do that? Because I want people that are listening now who are going through a heartbreak to understand their psychology a little bit more about why their mind does that.
So remember, you're withdrawing from this thing, from this substance of love. And so when you're withdrawing, you're thinking about it a lot. Like when you're withdrawing from heroin, the idea of the high that you can get is just, it's going to be the most amazing thing. Do you think about how you'll feel when the high passes? No, you just think about the high. And our minds in general has evolved to remind us when something is very painful so we don't do it again. Like it'll make us anxious and it'll keep putting it in our head so we avoid that mistake, because our mind wants us to keep the pain fresh. It's the best teacher. We don't want to keep the pain fresh, but our mind does. So our mind will keep reminding us of these ideal moments and see how great that was. You don't want to feel this way again, but we do want to feel this way again. We just have to stop thinking about how ideal it was. And so one of the things I've recommended in my TED talk and my book, and I recommend in general, is your mind will throw at you an extremely unbalanced, curated picture. It's up to you to balance the picture out. So when you have that image of that ideal, wonderful weekend, you have to insert, but yeah, actually, we argued on the way there. They really disappointed me that morning. I was hoping we'd have tons of sex and we didn't. And yeah, we had that really nice part there and another nice part there, but there were so many holidays we took that were horrific. You really need to add in that reality so that you're reminding yourself what you lost wasn't the most amazing thing in the world. It was maybe even a great relationship, but one in which you still had to make a lot of compromises, one in which you still had doubts, one in which there was still a lot of moments where you felt like, I'm not sure this is for me. You have to remind yourself it wasn't ideal and perfect.
Yes, I love that. My question is this: why do people get their hair cut, they change their hairstyle and hair color when they get a breakup? Why do they want to change the way they look drastically?
The person who breaks up or the person who gets broken up, are you referring to?
The person who has been left.
They're trying to reclaim their identity, right? There are a lot of compromises. You were with this person, they liked your hair this way, they liked you to wear this, or they responded to you best when you did that. And you now want to reclaim that, and you want to feel different, and you want to have a new beginning, and you want to feel like you're starting over, not that you're still lost in that last chapter. So a great way to do that is to change your external image if you can. I would do my hair if I could, but there's just not enough of it to do much with. So it's not an option for me when I'm going to break up. People change their environment, whether it's their homes, their walls, their social media pages, and their appearance. And it's actually helpful because you get to feel different, like you're starting over.
Yes, yes. Let's talk about distractions then. That's another method of getting over a loss. So do distractions work, and what sort of distractions?
So I'm not for distractions just in the sense of, oh, just do something else. I'm for what we were talking about earlier. Invest in other areas of your life, which you have perhaps neglected a bit or not taken care of enough. So for example, have you been working out? Have you taken care of your physical health? Have you been eating healthy? Have you been meditating? Have you been doing cardiovascular exercise? Join a running group, why don't you? Because it's a good way to meet people. But we also know that running and cardiovascular exercise is really good for emotional health and is a really good tonic for anxiety and depression, both of which you might be experiencing as part of the heartbreak. You used to paint and draw and you haven't done any of that. Take a class, like rekindle that aspect of yourself. So I think all of those things are ways to quote unquote distract, but actually ways to reinvigorate your sense of purpose and identity and remind yourself of who you were outside of that relationship.
I love that distinction because a lot of people are using socializing as a form of distraction, but the way I see it, they're just putting off what they're going to feel when they get home and they're alone again.
With one exception, Sam, what one ingredient that's very important for breakups is social support. It's really a very, very important ingredient for all forms of grief, right? That's why all rituals of grief have some kind of form of community support. But so if you're going out with friends, even if you're not, certainly if you're talking about it and getting support, but even if at some point you're not talking about it because they just have heard the story 1,000 times and they just don't want to hear it anymore, but you're hanging out with them and there's this tacit vibe of we're here for you, here, we're doing this, we're trying to get your mind off it. It feels very supportive and it's a good distraction if it involves some forms of social support.
So that ties nicely with my next questions, and that is, should you talk about it when you've gone through a breakup with your friends? And if so, is there a point where it's ad nauseum and you just have to stop talking about it?
Yes. So first of all, you should talk about it to the extent that you want to. There's some people who don't want to, and maybe they need to talk about it a little bit less, though I believe talking about it somewhat is actually important because you want to get your own thoughts in order. You want to get an outside perspective. Friends are really important because actually this was a line in the TED talk that got cut, but it was, if you're trying to balance that list of idealized qualities of the person in the relationship and you forget some of the demerits, ask your friends because they've been dying to tell you for years and they'll happily tell you now what they didn't like about the person that you were with. So they're good reminders for that as well. But there's a whole perspective there you can get from friends, which is useful. If you don't want to talk about it, you don't have to, but talking about it works to an extent. When you're repeating the same thing, I think everyone has that friend or you've been that person where 4 months after the breakup, you sat down with your best friend and you go, but why did he say that in that message? And your friend wants to like bang their head against the table because, oh my goodness, I can't have that conversation again. It just gets very repetitious and the person just truly ruminating and obsessing. It's absolutely not useful. And the quest for answers is not useful at some point. It actually doesn't matter. It's been 4 months. You're broken up. What does it matter what they intended to say in that message? They're not around anymore. You're actually just keeping the pain alive by asking the question when it's completely irrelevant. Give yourself an explanation, which in 90% of the cases is they were not in love with me anymore for whatever reason. What does it matter why? It happens all the time. People drift.
But people who ruminate or have a tendency to ruminate, they're the ones that suffer the most, don't they, out of a breakup?
Because it is the most high octane fuel for rumination, heartbreak. There's so much that you can obsess about. But you really have to understand that doing that is just deepening your pain every time you do it. You are trying to remove and weaken the associations in your neural pathways between you and that person, of which there are many. And every time you obsess and think about it, you're actually strengthening those associations. You're making it more likely you will think of that upsetting thing. You're making it more likely they will come into your head and pop into your head all the time. You are actually working against what you should be doing. It's like taking a knife and making a wound deeper. It's just the wrong thing to do. As tempting as it is, and as natural as it feels, once you're just going over the same ground again and again, and that can happen very soon, it's harmful. And as difficult as it is, don't do it.
Yes.
Or just look at the glaze in your friend's eyes when you bring up the topic for the 10th time, and they're literally looking for some kind of escape button that he can just press eject and get out of there because they don't want to have the conversation again.
Yeah, absolutely. I love what you said earlier about reinvesting in yourself. So that's the advice for people that are listening now. I think the best thing that you can do if you are getting over a breakup and you feel like your heart is broken is that, yes, a part of you has died, but you need to look for growth in other parts. And I always remind people to go back to the 8 areas of life, and especially, Guy, what you mentioned, the tree of health, your physical, mental, emotional, spiritual well-being, especially the physical. I find exercise and taking care of yourself can be that chemical reset that's going on, replacing the cortisol and adrenaline with the endorphins. Exercise is a great way to hit the reset button. Sure, that sad feeling might creep in after a few hours. When you go to the gym or go for a run with a runner's club and you hit that reset button and you're feeling good for those 2 to 3 hours, that's the time where you should sit down and start planning your next day. Because the more you do, the more you read, the more you work, the more friendships you form, the more you get out there and work on those 8 areas of life, the more new shoots of growth are going to start happening in your life. And after a while, yes, you've had that branch on that tree of love just die off, but you've replaced it with new shoots. And the best way to really begin to love someone else is to really, truly love yourself. Now, I know that sounds like a cliche, but the way to love yourself is to eat well, exercise, give your best at work, be a fun and loving friend, keep reading books and listening to podcasts, grow yourself, because that's the only way you can prepare yourself mentally and emotionally for the next relationship. So I really love that tip that you gave, Guy. It's not about distraction. It's about progress and growth in those areas that you've neglected over the years. I think that's a huge takeaway from this podcast. Thank you so much, Guy, for bringing that out. Now, before we wrap it up, I want to just go back a step before heartbreak. How do you know when a romantic relationship is coming to an end? How do you know?
If you're on the side of the person who wants to leave because you're just feeling less and less invested in the relationship, you're feeling distant, you're feeling not invested, you care about the person, but they're just not central to you anymore, or that you feel like you're getting bored. Now, your response to those feelings, by the way, to the extent that the relationship has been significant, should be to do something about them within the relationship, to say to your partner, I'm feeling a little bit bored with you or with life, and I want to work on things. I want to try and recover our sense of excitement, like alert your partner. A lot of the time that happens because they haven't invested in the relationship. They don't have date night. They're not doing things together as a couple. They're just in this transactional mode or parenting mode, and they haven't really done the things that would make the relationship feel rewarding. So there's certain fixes. The fix shouldn't be just like, off I go. The fix should be what can be addressed within the relationship. That should absolutely be the first step. And then if really you've tried that, whatever, then you might leave. I do want to say something about how if you're in a toxic relationship, because that's super important. You're in a toxic relationship when the person you're with makes you feel bad about yourself.
Wow, yes.
Bad about yourself, not about what you do. You might have an annoying habit that they're like, I can't stand it when you bite your fingernails, whatever. Bad about yourself, they make you feel shamed. They make you feel embarrassed. They make you feel less confident. They make you feel dependent. They make you feel too needy. If that person makes you feel bad about yourself and you, as a response, are working hard to try and address them in a way that they'll make you feel good, but you have to work at it because it's not happening naturally, that's a huge, huge problem. You have to ask yourself, am I making them feel good about themselves, or am I in one of those bickering, bad relationships that we both can't stand each other anymore? Or is it really one-sided, which it might be? Again, actually, just to mention the podcast, the holiday episode, and it's about a woman who just got divorced, and it's the first holiday after divorce. We go into the relationship was toxic. It's very clear, and you can hear the examples of what was happening and how she felt, and you'll be like, oh, if you feel like that, this is not good.
Yes, yes. That's some beautiful clarity. It's simple, but so effective. It's like, how does that person make you feel? Do they make you feel confident? Do they make you feel inspired? And that's a message for all couples in a relationship, even relationships that are going well. Your duty of care in that relationship
is
to wake up every morning and make it your goal for the day to make them feel good. I remember when, you know, my wife and I first got together, before we got married, I said to her, all I want to do for the rest of my life is make you smile. Now, I haven't achieved that 100% of the time, but And that's what I do. I wake up every morning and I say, how do I make my daughter smile? How do I make my wife smile? Right. What's going to put a smile on their face? And that's a very, very simple question that you can ask yourself. What can I do today to put a smile on the people that I care about on their face?
I love it.
Yeah. Beautiful. Thank you, Guy. Thank you for making the time. I know how busy you are. You've been extremely busy on your podcast. And I'm really feeling really grateful and thankful and honored that you would carve out that time for us. Thank you.
It's my pleasure, Sam. It's always great to talk to you, and I miss you and hope to see you sometime soon when the world comes a little bit more normal. But it's my pleasure. I really enjoy talking to you always.
Fantastic. Okay, everyone, thank you for listening to today's podcast. Until next time, live consciously, my friends.